Krishna, Krishna.
Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopinath Saimakunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Ki Vrindavan Dham Ki Mathura Dham Ki Navadip Dham Ki Ganga Maya Ki Jaya Yamuna Maya Ki Jaya Tulsi Devi Ki Jaya Bhakti Devi Ki Jaya Srila Prabhupada Ki ISKCON Founder Acharya A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Samaveda Bhakta Vrinda Ki All glorious to the assembled devotees. All glorious to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. Glories to Srila Prabhupada. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskritya Naram Chaiva Narottamam Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam Tojayam Udiraye Nasta Prishabhadishu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Tamashloke Bhaktir Bhavati Naishniki. This morning we're reading from the fourth canto, Dhruva Maharaj Leaves Home, chapter 8, text 26. Aho,
Teja,
Kshatriyanam.
Aho,
Teja, Kshatriyanam. Mana. Bangam Amrityatam Mana Bangam Amrityatam Balo Bi Ayam Rida Date Balo Bi Ayam Rida Date Yat Samatur Asad Vacha Yat Samatur Asad Vacha Aho Teja Kshatriyanam Mana Bangam Amrityam Balopi Ayam Ridadate Yat Samatur Asad Vacha Oteja Kshatriyanam Mana Bangam Amrityatam Balopiyam hridadate yat samatura sadvacha. Aho teja kshatriyanam manabhanga namrishyatam balabhyam mahate yatsamatura sadvacha. Aho teja kshatriyanam Balapi Atyam surprising it is. Teja, power. Kshatriyana, of the Kshatriyas. Manabhangam, hurting the prestige. Amrityatam, unable to tolerate. Bala, only a child. Api, although. Ayam, this. Hrida, at heart. Date, as taken. Yat, that which. Samatu, of the stepmother. Asat, unpalatable. Vacha, words. Translation: how wonderful are the powerful Kshatriyas. They cannot tolerate even a slight infringement upon their prestige. Just imagine, this boy is only a small child, yet harsh words from his stepmother proved unbearable to him. Repeating the verse: how wonderful are the powerful Kshatriyas. They cannot tolerate even a slight infringement upon their prestige. Just imagine, this boy is only a small child, yet harsh words from his stepmother proved unbearable to him. Report by Srila Prabhupada. The qualifications of the Kshatriya are described in the Bhagavad Gita. Two important qualifications are to have a sense of prestige and not to flee from battle. It appears that the Kshatriya blood within the body of Dhruva Maharaj was naturally very active. If the Brahminical Kshatriya or Vaishya culture is maintained in a family, naturally the sons and grandsons inherit the spirit of the particular class. Therefore, according to the Vedic system, the samskara, or the reformatory system, is maintained very rigidly. If one fails to observe the reformatory measures current in the family, one is immediately degraded to a lower standard of life. Kama Guna Timurandasha Gunanjana Shakya Chakshura Militam Yena Tashmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Srila Prabhupada has given us, actually Narada Muni is speaking this verse, and Narada is indirectly chiding, or teasing, you might say, Dhruva Maharaj. He's saying, this is amazing, you're quite a Kshatriya, little boy. Even though you're a child, you're very much interested in pursuing the Kshatriya spirit of not tolerating an insult. So this is different from the Brahmins. The Brahmins are very tolerant. They don't care for anyone's insult. It doesn't bother them. But the Kshatriya is very concerned like this about his sense of false prestige. Actually, I have a little confession to make. I usually try to ad-lib my classes as much as possible, take a few notes. But somehow I just became absorbed in taking notes here. I have 9 pages of notes on my computer, and I don't know if I'm going to use them all or not. But the confession I want to make is an apology for always misreciting the verse. I'm always making some mistake. And so I usually don't recite the verse in Alachua. I'm doing chapatis or something like that, and it's coming over the intercom. I go along with it, but it's a little fuzzy. And I don't like to recite it usually because I stumble at least one or two words, and it's embarrassing. So, however, the atmosphere here in Mayapur has been so inspiring to me. And I humbly beg to apologize. And somehow here in Mayapur I felt obligated to recite the verse. So every day I've been reciting the verse. And every day I've been making a mistake. So I've taken this as a kind of turning point in my Krishna consciousness, and I hope that I'm going to work a little harder to study and get these verses down, get the pronunciation down at least. So I realize that these are kind of lame excuses, the chapati making and the and so forth, but the truth is I haven't studied enough. Anyway, this verse, we're given the main measure or the mean measure of a Kshatriya, a prince no less. Prabhupada writes the idea about the Kshatriyas having a sense of prestige. Now this has always been foreign to me, but it's most useful for a Kshatriya. A sense of prestige. So we all feel somehow that I'm a worthy person. Even people with low self-esteem, they have some sense of prestige. They don't want to take abuse. Sometimes they take abuse for a long time and then they eventually put a stop to it. But generally we don't have the sense of prestige that the Kshatriyas have. By astrology, I'm supposed to be a Kshatriya, but I don't really see like that. I was in the police academy at one point. I finished the police academy, but I never got hired as a policeman. And my father was a soldier, and he was a corporate business manager, and dealt with politicians, was a lobbyist, and so forth. And his father was a policeman, and my mother was a soldier. She was in the war. She was the first WAC, Women's Army Corps, into Berlin after the Second World War, the end of the Second World War. And her father was a cavalryman. He was in the service and rode horses, charged into battle, and so forth. And her grandfather was an Indian chief, as a matter of fact. So my great-grandfather was an Indian chief. He married an English woman. And we know how brave the English are. Everyone knows how brave. That's been commented on in the class here. So anyway, we have these different... We have these different moods. According to our different moods, we have a feeling of more or less prestige, that I'm better than others and I should have my share, I should have more for myself than others have. This is the nature of the Kshatriya. Of course, the Kshatriya has also this incredibly generous nature. Now, he takes for himself, but he's also supposed to give to others. He's not supposed to just hold it for himself, but he takes and then he distributes properly. So this is the mean of the Kshatriya. The Brahmins and Kshatriyas are said to be like this. The Brahmins give instruction, the Kshatriyas execute the instruction. The Vaishyas and Sudras are like this. You know, the Vaishyas give instruction, the Sudras execute the instructions. So the separation is kind of like this. You have the Brahmins and the Kshatriyas, and you have the Vaishyas and the Sudras. And in this way, society regulates itself. This is Krishna's arrangement. He knows that the Vaishyas, you know, they don't like to associate with the Kshatriyas. The Vanashram system is actually very very wonderful. The Sudras, they don't want to think about, you know, vast expanses of money and dealings like that. It's beyond their comprehension. It's beyond their ability to calculate and so forth. And the Vaishyas, they don't want to be Kshatriyas because they don't want to get hurt. They don't want to fight, get disturbed like that, get in trouble, risk their lives, you know. They're not willing to do that. They'll risk their life for money, but not for defending others and so forth. And then the Kshatriyas, they don't want to be Brahmins because they have this nature. They like to be active and fight and so forth. They don't want to just sit and study all day. However, for the Kshatriya, it's important to study. The Kshatriya stories, I remember, they came forward to my mind. It's in Boy Scouts, I was like about 13 or something. And the scoutmaster had been around the world, served in the military and so forth. This was in the 50s, so most of the adults at that time had been in the Second World War. So he told us a story. He said, the most fearless warriors in the world, in the whole world, are the Kshatriyas. And I'd never even heard the word before. He said, but a Kshatriya, he said, would come into a bar, you know, in India or wherever they were, and they'd take their sword out, and they'd rap on the bar 3 times. And he said, by the end of the 3rd time, everybody would be out of that bar. They'd just evacuate. You know, because bars are places where people get into fights. And so that was like a challenge. He would come in and challenge, and everybody would just leave, because they knew how fearful these people were. They were just completely, they were fearless themselves, and they struck fear in everyone's heart because they were just totally in charge, you know. So you see sometimes in Delhi, I lived in Delhi for a while, you see sometimes these Sikh people who are Kshatriyas, you know. And the young men would be like, you know, 6'6" and so forth. They're very, very big, very, very large. And they have this mood. So with their bodily strength and so forth, they're naturally leaders. One family, one prince, there was one family in India, the prince, there was a family ritual to prove their prowess before they could actually become the king. They had to go into the forest and kill a tiger. And if you've ever seen a tiger in a cage, they weigh about 600 to 800 pounds, and it's all muscle. It's just like, you know, it's intense. And they have arms like this, you know. They're amazing. They're very long. You know, they can leap in these things. The tiger, whether the tiger can kill like an elephant, how he does it, he grabs the elephant's trunk and he claws out the eyes, and once the elephant is blind, he can't do anything. So the tiger, this Kshatriya has to go into the forest with a knife, and he has to kill a tiger. And this is the way he proves himself. And if he doesn't do this, he can't be the king. So like that, the Kshatriyas are very real. They're very serious. They're not mixed up or timid souls like me. And they use their sense of personal prestige to affect leadership, not simply to enjoy the trappings of rank and status. And so they're willing to stand up to the forces of their enemies. So we don't see this today in America especially. We don't see this mood. The constitution, the government there is such that the Kshatriyas have been replaced by Vaishyas. They have, the constitution of America was written by Vaishyas, and the idea of private property was incorporated into that constitution, so that they could save themselves from having their property confiscated by the king. The kings used to be able to take anyone's property. They do this in England, they do this, you know, wherever, they can just take it. So the Americans were very concerned about the property rights. So the Constitution, although it talks about equality for men and so forth, was actually written by Vaishyas. And this is what the capitalism is about. It's a society of Vaishyas. So we're concerned, you know, as subjects or as citizens of the world, we're concerned about the management of the world. Everyone's concerned like that. We have concerns. What's going to happen to us if the management becomes ridiculous? If the management is captured by some madman, like in Cambodia, we had there was a madman there, Pol Pot, and he was strong enough to capture the government. And then, with the aid of the Americans, he planted landmines all over the country. So, if you go to Cambodia today, you see all these people sitting around with one or two legs amputated, gone. And they stepped on a landmine. So like this, the Kshatriyas today are more like gangsters. They're ruthless. They have that sense of strength. But their objective is not to make people better off. Their objective is not to make people happy. Pol Pot, his objective was to kill all the Brahmins. He killed all the teachers, killed all the doctors, all the lawyers. So if you go to Cambodia today, you see most of the people there are like in their late 30s. You don't see any really old people there. It's amazing. So this is the nature. Our world today is in charge of these ruthless gangsters, and we're suffering. There was one verse I wanted to read in the Bhagavad Gita, the purport. It goes into detail about the nature to a certain extent of the Kshatriyas. Because the Kshatriya has two things that he has to watch out for. One thing, according to Chanaka Panda, he has to watch out for his sadhana. He has to be expert in his sadhana. He has to execute his sadhana very, very carefully. So we don't see that today in the modern leaders. They're not terribly prayerful. And he also has to avoid assassination, either from outside forces or inside forces. He has to be very, very careful to avoid being killed. So it's not an easy life. Not an easy life. Anyway, according to the... This particular purport struck me as very interesting. It talks about the nature of the Kshatriyas. Arjuna here is having his difficulty. And he's talking with Krishna. He says, "Sin will overcome us if we slay such aggressors. Therefore, it is not proper for us to kill the sons of Dhritarashtra and our friends. What should we gain, O Krishna, husband of the goddess of fortune? And how could we be happy by killing our own kinsmen?" So Arjuna is a strong Kshatriya. He's proved himself many, many times. But here he's vacillating and wondering, what is the use of being a Kshatriya in this situation if I have to kill my own family members? So Prabhupada says in the purport, "According to Vedic injunctions, there are six kinds of aggressors. A poison giver, one who sets fire to the house, one who attacks with deadly weapons, one who plunders riches, one who occupies another's land, and one who kidnaps a wife. Such aggressors are at once to be killed." Actually, all of these pertain to the Kurus. They did all of these different things. They captured Draupadi, they plundered the riches of the Pandavas, they cheated them in gambling, and they took their land, so forth. They attacked with deadly weapons, gave them poison, set fire to the house. All of these things are there. So Arjuna had every reason, you know, not just one reason, but six reasons why he should fight. At any rate, such aggressors are at once to be killed, and no sin is incurred by killing such aggressors. Such killing of aggressors is quite befitting an ordinary man, but Arjuna was not an ordinary person. He was saintly by character, and therefore he wanted to deal with them in saintliness. This kind of saintliness, however, is not for a Kshatriya. Although a responsible man in the administration of a state is required to be saintly, he should not be cowardly. For example, Lord Rama was so saintly that people even now are anxious to live in a kingdom of Lord Ram, Ram Raj. But Lord Ram never showed any cowardice. For the politicians today, they use that sometimes. We'll make it like Ram Raj. There's sometimes that claim is made in certain politicians. But Lord Ram never showed any cowardice. Ravana was an aggressor against Rama, against Ram because Ravana kidnapped Rama's wife, Sita. But Lord Ram gave him sufficient lessons, unparalleled in the history of the world. In Arjuna's case, however, one should consider the special type of aggressors, namely his own grandfather, his own teacher, friends, sons, grandsons, etc. Because of them, Arjuna thought that he should not take the service or severe steps necessary against ordinary aggressors. Besides that, saintly persons are advised to forgive. And this is sometimes very difficult, but I know devotees in the Latra are giving classes on forgiveness, how to become forgiving. Because when we have a knot in the heart of enmity, it hurts us. It's not that it's hurting anyone else, but it hurts us. But such injunctions for saintly persons are more important than any political emergency. So if you're brahminical, if you're on a brahminical level, these things are more important to avoid or to forgive. Arjuna considered that rather than kill his own kinsmen for political reasons, it would be better to forgive them on the grounds of religion and saintly behavior. He did not, therefore, consider such killing profitable simply for the matter of temporary bodily happiness. After all, kingdoms and pleasures derived therefrom are not permanent. So why should he risk his life and eternal salvation, as he would go to hell, he was afraid he'd go to hell by doing these things, by killing his own kinsmen? Arjuna addressing of Krishna as Madhava, or the husband of the goddess of fortune, is also significant in this connection. He wanted to point out to Krishna that, as the husband of the goddess of fortune, he should not induce Arjuna to take up a matter which would ultimately bring about misfortune. Krishna, however, never brings misfortune to anyone, to say nothing of his devotees. So we appreciate in this purport the necessity of following Krishna's instructions. Krishna's advising Arjuna to fight. And the necessity of following Krishna's instructions leads ultimately to the greatest good. And that is our objective, the greatest good, to satisfy the Supreme Lord, Shri Krishna. We cannot think or imagine of a greater or more beneficial action for ourselves than devotional service. Devotional service is in our own best self-interest, always. So, today, unfortunately, we see, you know, since men started fighting in holes and trenches and jungles and cities instead of on open fields, since they started killing innocent people, since the time of the sniper shooter, you know, who kills from a distance, the Kshatriya spirit has become corrupt. We can't actually say it's Kshatriya. We can't actually say they're Kshatriya. They're just rascals, cheaters. And so this is going on. Today I was told that today the fighting, like in places like Iraq and Afghanistan, this is going on in the bunkers. The lieutenants and the captains, they're in the bunkers and they're watching TV. And the soldiers they send out, they have a video thing on their head and they're videoing the battle situation. And so these guys are giving them instruction from this very safe place. They're not leading the charge. They're just simply, go to the left, go to the right. They actually don't know what's really going on there. And the person in charge, the sergeant or whatever, he has to say, well, it's like this, you know, if we do that, he has to go back and forth. All this time is lost, you know. Meanwhile, the enemy is beating in and shooting. But like this, people have lost their concept of what is real leadership. And of course, today, if someone speaks nicely, if he tells lies nicely, then he can get elected. Now, 2 years ago, I was here, a devotee gave a class in which he made references to the mental condition of sociopaths and compared them to the condition of the leaders. A sociopath is a person that has a disease that whatever is good for him, that's the best thing. He sees no other suffering, he sees no other difficulty, he's ready to steal or kill or maim simply for his own pleasure. If it's good for him, then that's the highest order. So today we see in the politics of the world, so many different places, that these sociopaths are in control of the world. They're basically demoniac persons. And one of the qualities of the sociopath is that he can lie. So these politicians, when they give their nice speeches and so forth, can understand that they're simply telling lies. And they can lie very, very sincerely and without any qualms or setbacks. And if you call them on the lie, they won't even answer. They just go on and tell you another lie. It's quite amazing. He pointed out that these modern leaders are sociopaths, and they have no qualms about killing masses of people, denying people medical care, and maintaining a double standard of morals, and presenting themselves as upright, generous leaders of society. And Kshatriya is supposed to be generous. He's supposed to give. So the government is usually giving things, in America anyway. They're trying to give things away. But the basic things they don't want to give. So most national and local leaders today are genuine only in their complete hypocrisy. It's their only genuine quality, is they're complete hypocrites. They have, in fact, no conscience. This is impossible to deny. The examples are there. My own world, we have, like, I'm from Florida, so very close to us is this country, Cuba, this little country of Cuba. And actually, Cuba is led by a fairly convincing Kshatriya. He actually took over the country by military action. He immediately stopped the gambling and prostitution that was going on in the big hotels there. He nationalized the wealth of the country, the oil companies and so forth, so that the people could benefit from this money and not just a few wealthy people. And he created schools and free hospitals, you know. In America, you don't have free hospitals. A little country like Cuba, which has had so many economic disasters and so forth, so many problems, still they're able to give. But in America, you can't give. So he created these schools and free, and there were something like 20 attempts, 23 I think is the number, attempts on his life over the past 40 years. People have tried to kill him so many times. The CIA has gone in with so many different operatives. But he's somehow managed to survive. It's amazing. So he has some benedictions because he's actually put himself on the line of being a Kshatriya. And the CIA, of course, hates him because he confiscated American wealth. The CIA is basically run by the oil companies. So he can, and they can't dislodge him as much as they try. So one can... He's a communist, though. One can say, okay, the communists are not very good. That's a bad thing, to be a communist. They're godless and so forth. But this is true in any country. Any of these leaders, they may profess that they're God-conscious, that they're churchgoers and so forth. They may profess that they're members of this religion or that religion, the Hindu religion, the Muslim religion, the Christian religion, Jewish religion. But their real interest is material activity, maintaining material situations. And of course they're willing to do anything to do this. As talking about assassination, all these assassination attempts, we can understand actually in America that no one actually comes to a position of power unless he's already approved by the management of the country, the hidden management of the country. So we have our own, this assassination business is going on constantly. Our own devotee, Lekha Shivanti, who with Ambarish donated the Detroit temple, her parents and sister were killed in an airplane crash. On investigation, the police found some dozen things wrong with the plane. Any of these things could have caused the crash. So like this, why was he killed? He was a labor leader. He was the president, head of the AFL-CIO, which is the biggest labor union in America. And he was under consideration for running for the presidency of the country. So that was something that the entrenched wealthy people in America did not want, because he would have set up so many different things. This idea of like free medical aid, this has been going on since time immemorial, the idea of having it. But they can never get past the medical people. Never gets past them. So But anyway, Lake Shivanti, she was asked to go on this trip with her family. They said, come on, please. They encouraged her, seriously, come on this trip. It was just going to be a short weekend trip to a short, you know, short flight and so forth. But somehow, by Krishna's directive, within her heart, she didn't go. She just said, no, I don't want to go. But like this, if someone gets the point, well, if we depend on Krishna, the more we depend on Krishna, the more we'll get guidance from Krishna. Our objective in Krishna consciousness is is not to start some paramilitary organization or to raise an army of kshatriyas who will be very God conscious. I mean, it would be very nice if we did that. But the business of Krishna consciousness, of our ISKCON movement, is to bring those kshatriya, those with a kshatriya spirit, to Krishna consciousness, to get them to engage in their sadhana, to get them to engage in making an effort to go back to home, back to Godhead. This is our business, of course. This is our business for the Vaishyas, for the Sudras, for the kshatriyas. We have the same business for everyone. And it's true. And then, of course, this objective of becoming Krishna conscious can be realized while one is a kshatriya, or while one is a Vaishya, or while one is a Sudra. It doesn't require that one become a Brahmin. I know at the beginning of the movement we had this idea that everyone should come to the temple, live in the temple, be a devotee in the temple, and so forth. Everyone should work in such a way that they became full-time devotees. That was kind of the idea. But of course that was not what Prabhupada wanted or what Krishna wanted. And over a period of time, we came to realize, a lot of devotees came to realize anyway, that vanashram was a natural occurring phenomena in every society. So we don't have to practice vanashram. We just have to become, as far as everyone here is concerned, practically speaking, a brahminical person engaged in Daivi Vanashram. That means you may have the propensity of a Sudra. You may be like a Sudra. You may be a Kshatriya. You may be a Vaishya. But you're offering everything to Krishna. You're giving everything to Krishna. Your primary identity is, I am a devotee of Krishna. Like Lord Chaitanya said, I'm not a Brahmin, I'm not a Vaishya, I'm not a Sudra. I'm Dasana, Dasana, Dasana. I'm a devotee of Krishna. So this is our objective, to get to that realization. We don't want any political dalliance. That's not for us. There's no future in that. We can't promise anything, except that you can go back to Godhead by practicing Krishna consciousness. By becoming God conscious, you can leave the material world. Ours is an exit philosophy. We're not here to redecorate the place. You know, we do a nice job as best we can of making things decent, nice, clean, and so forth. But our objective is not to redecorate the material world and make it a place where we can live for thousands of years. Christians, they have that philosophy. Jesus will come and everyone will live for 1,000 years. And it'll be really nice. You'll have a nice car, you'll have a nice house, you'll have barbecue, you'll have all this nonsense. Their cosmology is sorely lacking. At any rate, the Kshatriya's power, the sense of prestige, which is an initial point in this verse today, in this lecture, or in purport also, is that our self-esteem, our feeling of self-worth, should be grounded in spiritual knowledge. Our sense, if you're a Kshatriya, you become a servant of religious principles. You enforce these religious principles. And by doing that, you serve God in that way. You become like the Lord's policeman, as it were. Of course, the police are also supposed to act on the idea of what is good for the public safety, what is good for people's sense of satisfaction in the material world, how to have a good time here and so forth without hurting anyone or hurting yourself. This is the idea. But our real business is our real business in Krishna consciousness is to get to a point where we are 100% engaged in Krishna service, And we don't see any other alternative. No matter what we're doing, we see that what we are doing is Krishna service. We're offering these things to Krishna. So with a sincere heart, one can do anything. Prabhupada said even the atomic bomb can be used in Krishna service. So this is kind of amazing. We generally tend to want to think in peaceful terms. But it's a fact. Even this can be used. Of course, we don't want to take that responsibility at this point in our movement of using the atomic bomb, fortunately. So Dhruva Maharaj doesn't exactly fit the image of a Kshatriya fighting for religious ideals. He doesn't have to be on guard against aggressors. He doesn't have to... But he does have to do this one thing. This one thing that we all have to do is control our senses. So Dhruva, even though he's a child and he's been insulted, he wants ego satisfaction of getting an impossibly huge kingdom as revenge. It's like, I'll show you, stepmother. He's using God as his order supplier. He's on the Kanista level. You know, he worships with a material intention. So I recently realized that I kind of treat Krishna as my order supplier too every day. When I get out of bed, I say, Krishna, please help me. Such a struggle sometimes. And he does. Every morning empowers me to come and perform my sadhana. And of course, I have a reason, a spiritual reason for performing my sadhana, which is to become Krishna conscious. So this is our objective in Krishna consciousness, to put together a lifestyle based around the service of the Supreme Lord. And with this in mind, we pursue our activities in the short range, on a daily basis, and we pursue in our long-range plans this objective of becoming God-conscious. So I had one verse I wanted to read. A friend of mine recently shared this with me. Sometimes we're having difficulties in Krishna consciousness, and it's not easy. This is not a snap, as they say. It's not a piece of cake. Krishna consciousness is not, although there's a lot of prasadam in Krishna consciousness, it's not exactly a piece of cake. Sometimes we really have a difficulty, a trial here and there. So my friend Parvita and I was having a discussion. He was telling me about a program that he put on. He's an actor and he does shows. He lives in Amsterdam. But he was sent by the Italian Yatra to come to a GBC meeting. So he went there, and two out of four actors, got sick and couldn't come. And during the play, the microphones went out, everything went out. And and then at one high point in the play, where it's a little tricky to understand exactly what's going on, and it's very important that everyone pay attention, a chair leg broke on one of the ladies sitting in the audience. She fell over, and everyone, of course, was completely distracted. So like this, he's going through these different changes. But he sent me this verse. I mentioned him also. I'm having some changes. And he said, here's a verse from Srimad Bhagavatam. Having awakened faith in the narration of my glories, being disgusted with all material activities, knowing that all sense gratification leads to misery, but being unable to renounce all sense enjoyment, my devotee should remain happy and worship me with great faith and conviction, even though he is sometimes engaged in sense enjoyment. My devotee knows that all sense gratification leads to a miserable result, and he sincerely repents such activities. So we can understand in this verse that Krishna is an understanding God, who simply desires the return of the living entities to their forgotten home. And that's all Lord Krishna really wants from us, is to return back to him. He wants that more than we want it. And he's making such a wonderful facility as this ISKCON movement, this Hare Krishna movement, available to those souls who are sincerely tired of material life and want to give it up. So I think I have just this one realization, actually. I don't have very, very many realizations, but I have this one realization that Krishna consciousness is the best system of all different systems for self-realization. And there's no other way. People get very upset when you say that, generally. The yoga practitioners, practitioners. But there's no other way. Hari nama, hari nama, hari nama, eva kevalam, glo nasteva, 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 gati ranyachan. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. This chanting of Hare Krishna is the perfect solution to all the problems of the world. And if we follow this this process, this simple process, chanting 16 rounds, avoiding sinful activities, we will definitely make rapid progress and go back to Godhead. I have that in full confidence. Dhanyavad. Any questions or comments? Yes, Prabhu. We don't have a mic out here today, huh? No mic today. Okay, can you come a little closer so I can hear you? Oh, you want to come and use this? You want to use this? The story about Lekha Shivanta, who was going to go with her family. Yes. She's a Prabhupada disciple. Yes, she and Ambarish donated the Detroit temple, the money for the Detroit temple. Yeah. Yes, Krishna had a plan for her. And so she wrote a whole book. She has a biography out about her father and what he was like. He was a very courageous man, a very sensitive, courageous man. Very, very popular in his organization, his labor union. Very handsome, charismatic person. So he was on his way to higher things, but unfortunately, not capable of pulling them off. Yes, Guru.
Well, maybe we have a factor. Now we are talking about
Guru
Maharaj.
He's
very young.
Sure, yeah.
What is the name of children? If denied or something, he feels bad about it. Please, your children tend to forget about it also.
Yes, and children forget very easily, yeah.
So they all the interface of not only as a mature master. And this particular fact of a young boy taking the instructions of a spiritual master and with determination endeavoring for something and seeking for it. So this fact of determination in a young child can throw some light on that.
That kind of determination in a young child is super phenomenal. There's no question that Dhruva Maharaj is an ordinary living being. It's interesting. On the way in here, I was thinking about this this austerity that Dhruva performed, and there was some lady walking by with two small boys, and I was thinking if they came to the class, I'd ask them, you know, are you boys ready to do this? Go to the forest and live on air and leaves and so forth. Of course not, you know, and nor are we. In our mature old age here, we're not ready to go to the forest and live on air and leaves and so forth. That's not for us. We have a different process. But because Dhruva Maharaj was exceptional, he got an exceptional spiritual master. And these exceptional persons, these stories are meant to inspire us and also to show us that Krishna can be purchased by our sincere effort. Whether or not we are as, well, it's obvious we're not as talented or spiritually advanced as Dhruva Maharaj. It's not that Dhruva Maharaj is an ordinary person who just happens, a conditioned soul who just happens to take up the path of this chanting the name of Narayan. However, we cannot, you know, we can't imitate, but we can be inspired. This Krishna consciousness movement is about putting forward a community, a group, a large group of people who are living spiritual life. I remember when I first came to devotional service, my first days in a temple, I was so impressed by the fact that the devotees were offering Guru Puja and offering flowers to Srila Prabhupada. I started to cry. I'd never been in an environment where people were offering homage to a sage. And my environment was completely antithetical to that. And so I actually became very emotionally involved. And I thought, you know, I wasn't aware of how great Prabhupada was. I wasn't aware of how erudite he was. There weren't many books out at that time. I'd read Bhagavad Gita in the blue version, you know. But I was aware here was a community of people who were engaged in a lifestyle that was God-conscious, and they were worshiping a sage, and this person had given each of those persons something very wonderful. And I think we all feel like that. Prabhupada has given us the most wonderful thing. So as this movement grows, it's our obligation to keep it pure, and to spread it out and put it out for people so they can see, yes, this is something that I can take part in. You know, we're not able to go to the forest, but we are able to be good householders and have our business and have our sadhana and chant 16 rounds in addition to all the other things that most, quote, normal people do, ordinary people do. We're able to do those things. And those things that puts us in a position of being very advanced to the ordinary person. You see, well, this person has really got something serious going on. I know in Alachua, it's amazing. We heard some report that our church, our temple there, is the most attended temple in the whole state. The highway patrol, you know, they come by every once in a while and they check how many people are coming to this particular location. It's part of their business of regulating the roads and so forth. And so by their statistics, because we have like about 50 cars every morning, you know, some of these churches, of course, have 800, 500, 1,000 people in the evenings and so forth, or in their Sunday morning. But because every morning we have more people coming to our temple, fairly, than any other church in the state. So like this, it's a foundation. We're building a foundation for a whole world. And each person in that foundation, each stone in that foundation, is an individual who practices Krishna consciousness. And that's the foundation of our movement. It's not about big buildings, although we're very excited to have this big temple go up, because this is Prabhupada's desire. I got one poster and I put it across from my sitting place. So when I look across the room, it looks like I'm looking out the window into a new... into the new temple. So I'm very, very pleased that that's happening, to see that happening after so many years of Prabhupada's desire to see that manifest. But that's not the essence. That's a sign of the community behind it. It's not the essence. The essence of the community is when you go into the community and you exchange with the members of that community. What are they like? What are those people like? There's so many, in Washington, D.C., there's so many big buildings. So many very impressive art galleries and museums and the Capitol and so forth. But I read one report once. I was in the doctor's office and I read a report from this woman. She had been there as a tourist with her family. And she said, our means are very median. You know, we're like lower middle class economically. You know, she's an intellectual person, but she didn't have a lot of money. And she said, when we went to the Capitol and so forth, we got this very, very brusque treatment by the snobs. She said they were snobbish people. They didn't want anything to do with the peasants, you know, because of the way they were dressed. You could see that the people in the in the offices and so forth of the Congress, they were very displeased to see them. You know, they're not happy to see them. So like that, we need to be on guard. You know, several days ago, there was a lady here who chastised the devotees for not taking proper care of guests and so forth. And although when she finished, I had the microphone, I gave the microphone to her, and then when she finished, I said, that's a tough act to follow. I was being a little sarcastic. So I want to apologize for that, because actually she had many good points. It's very, very important that we smile, that we be nice, that we, you don't have to spend hours with the guests every day. But those that we come in contact with, we make them feel welcome. You know, it's sometimes it's the last thing we have on our mind. But it is very important that our identity beyond Sudra, Vaishya, and all these different things, or Pujari and whatever, is that I am a representative of Krishna, and that people, you know, will judge Krishna. They will judge Krishna consciousness. They'll judge Srila Prabhupada by my activity. So, as one who has many, many times committed offenses in the Dham to the indigenous devotees, to the residents of the Dham, I'm very, very embarrassed by that. But it's a fact. So, any other questions or comments? We didn't get any notes from the internet on the atomic bomb thing, so that's good. Jai, all glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.